never wrong either.
Exactly. Okay. I'd like to call this meeting to order, the Overton Power District Number 5. Board meeting at the Mesquite office, December 10th at 3 p.m. Is there any public comment? Seeing as there's no public comment, do I hear a motion for acceptance of the agenda?
Can we leave that door?
Accept the agenda as presented?
Open.
I'll second that.
Guess not.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the agenda for tonight's meeting. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, item D, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held November 20th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
So moved that we accept it.
Second.
Second.
Okay, we got Dale and Jack and Mike, whatever order you want. It's definitely been moved and seconded. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, chair's report. I have nothing to report tonight other than I won't be at the next meeting. Item F. Attorney's report?
I have nothing at this time unless anyone has questions for me.
Hearing no questions, we'll go to the manager's report.
Okay, first up we'll have admin. Scott?
Okay. All right. I'm going to do my quarterly report today. But like always, we'll talk about cybersecurity first. We had 96% attendance in November's cybersecurity training. The training modules or lessons are there on the right-hand side. Okay, internal phishing. We had nobody click on our phishing emails in the month of November. We had 31,000 emails at a total of 2,966 spam email. Bulgaria remains top of the list for firewall blocks by country. Server system uptime remains 100%. Our data backup and restoration is at 100% for the month of November. It's been tested and doing good there. This is one of those things that I report on annually, our identity theft prevention policy. And it looks like Mike Young back in 2016 approved this. Oh, you remember doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
One of my first duties.
So this is an every year thing, and it's basically the red flags. And we talk about the committee. We have a committee on staff. And then every year, our privacy officer, which is our very own Stephen Brown, submits a report. We do two annual trainings. So the report is about meeting and policy review, training initiatives, what we learned about throughout the year, and then what the future focus is. So we have Stephen Brown as the privacy officer, Merlin Wallenzine as computer records, Kelly Cronkleton as employee records and training, and Christy Ames as the customer records. So just letting the board know that that was completed and done. Let's roll right into customer service, new automatic bill pay. For the last 3 months, we had 86 new signups in September, 50 in October, and 35 in November, which gives us 10,162 total customers that have signed up for automatic bill pay, or 54.43% of our customer base. New customers on e-bill, we had 80 in September, 57 in October, and 80 in November, which brings us to 5,938 total electronic e-bill customers, or 31.81% of our customer base. Total number of calls, we are trending down here. We had 1147 in September, 1488 October, 972 in November. Our average on hold wait time is right around 7 seconds for 2024. Our average talk time is trending down a little bit, so we're right under 2.5 minutes. Total walk-in customers, that also seems to be trending down a little bit. We had 1,672 in November. And now we will roll right into public relations. These are our OPD5 website statistics. In October, I believe we had an outage, a bigger outage. So if you see there, we had a little bit higher active users. We had 5,800 users on the site, 3,600 in November. And then if you look at their engagement time, they spent a little bit longer on the website as well, 61 seconds or a minute. Which seems to be trending up a little bit there too throughout the year. Social media and communications, new Instagram followers, 6, 10, and 5. Our Instagram followers in reach, October, once again a big month. Whenever we have an outage, we usually have a lot of reach. But we have 520 total Instagram followers. And then Facebook is the big one. This is, you know, the bigger platform that everybody uses. Number of posts, we did 2, October, 10, November. And once again, our new Facebook followers in the month of October was 127. And then we went back to our normal couple the month after. And then our Facebook reach, we're averaging right there around 5,000 people that sees our feed in any given month. And then our followers, we saw a big bump, and so you'll see 4403 in October, then 4398. And even though I'm reporting that we gained follow, I'm not reporting who unfollowed us. So there is a little bit of a discrepancy in the numbers, but we have 4398 followers on Facebook. Any questions?
Thank you, Scott.
Yep.
Boyd is subbing in for Randall, so I'll go to our engineering report. Thank you, Boyd.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be here. My short's fairly, my report is fairly short. We just wanted to report on the shoe fly that we have finished it, and there's a couple slides dictating what we did. If you can go to the next one. So at the long drive itself, we had to bypass the new switch yard because the center of the switch yard is right where the old line is. So we built a new line around it for the safety of personnel and the feasibility to build. We started at the long drive connecting to that steel pole there, and then we rerouted. If you go to the next one. And you see we ran a new line on the side up and around the switch yard to get around it. Reason being, this pole is going to come out, and then all the structures, the new ones, will go right down the center of that. So we'll temporarily be on this line for approximately about a year. And we did do a pre-construction meeting with our contractors, and they advised us that they would start right around the beginning of February, but they would be completely finished by the end of 2025 with the switch yard, Raptor, and the transmission line. So, any questions?
Before, there was a lot of comments by the homeowners. Any more comments by them you guys get, or complaints, I guess?
As of yet, we haven't had any comments. I think the initial comments were, they were wondering kind of what the wall would look like and what they would be looking at.
Their view, yeah.
Now that the wall is up and completed, we haven't seen any comments, but once we throw up towers and that, I imagine we'll get some comments.
Because a lot of stuff will stick above the wall.
Yeah. They'll be a mess.
Viewable.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have a few structures sticking up that they pick the colors, so.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice touch.
That's my report.
Thank you, Boyd. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Boyd? Okay, thanks, Boyd. Let's go ahead and go to Kyle, line operations.
All Okay, so for the month of November, service installations, 47 residential hookups, no commercial once again. Pretty steady with the residential, very minimal with the commercial for my team. Outages for the month of November, we have 4 planned and 2 unplanned outages. The planned outages show transformer replacements. Been doing a lot of effort and maintenance on those. We get a lot of rusted out, leaking transformers. We've got a team that's out doing audits and inspections and finding those transformers we're getting replaced out before they cause a fault. So that's one of our, a lot of our planned outages are. And then our unplanned outages, we have 2, looks like there. We have 1 that was a conductor failure, is what it says. It's bad connection on a pole. It's just a simple fix, connection that just got hot, caused an outage. The other one is a blown high voltage fuse here. That one's a little tougher. It's down here in a commercial complex. It shows it being out for just over 6 hours. And what the reasoning was it went out at 3:30 in the morning and no one's in business. And so we didn't get the call until, I can't remember, it was 7:30 or 8 o'clock. We had the power back on within 2 hours once we were actually called to the outage. So that's a tough one because that does go into our reporting there at that point. And that one was caused by, it says unknown, but we found the problem later on. It's a rodent inside those switches. And we're seeing more and more of that in our underground facilities. So our team is working on ways to remedy that because that's something new for us that we've not had to necessarily monitor and watch and prepare and prevent.
So are you talking about the rusting out and corrosion in the ground vault?
In the transformers, that the planned outages?
No, where the...
It was a rodent that caused that one. It was a rat. it was a great big old rat that got in there, and I don't know if they're using the conduits like as raceways. We've got ideas to plug them off. We're going to start throwing some ideas at it because we're seeing more and more of it being repetitive, so we've definitely got to do something very soon with that.
Okay.
Boyd already reported on a lot of this, so I'll kind of take a little different spin on it, but my team's been working pretty hard on the shoe fly, the bypass line as of lately, and all it is in preparation for those contractors come on site and get to work so we can make the alleyway for them to do their work. And you'll see my team working more and more on preparation for these big projects that come on. We've got work to do on this as well as on the major 138 line coming across the Mesa to this valley. It'll keep us pretty busy for the first quarter of next year for sure in preparations. This gives you a little different ground view, which might throw a little more perspective to it too. This is just some of the men in action on that project. And then recently we had all our apprentices go up and test. Well, 5 of our 6 apprentices go up and test. They took their yearly step test. It's what they did. And when they take that step test and accomplish it, they get to move on to the next level of their apprenticeship. These 5 men here on the side took their test and they moved on to this position here. Big congratulations to Tanner and Louise. They journeyed out. They're ready to become journeymen now. They've completed their apprenticeship program. Zach Barnum is now 4th step. Mike Abbott's now 4th step. And Dallin Levitt is a 2nd step apprentice. There's 4 steps to apprenticeship. I'm not sure if you're 100% aware on that. And then after these 2 men finish this year, they'll take their test a year from now, as long as they have hours, and they'll be in the position that Louise and Tanner are. Now that test day, it was just, was it just last week? Time flies. It's a 3-part test, and especially for these journeymen, it's a 2-day test. Like, it's getting to be where it's such a long, tedious day for them. Practical in the field work is part of their test, and that can be 5-6 hours long in the field, as well as their written parts, which are the written test and the transfer connections. So it's a stressful few days or a couple days for those men, and just big congratulations to them. And it was great for Overton Power's men here that the men that did go take their test, they succeeded very well.
I saw them out on a Saturday.
You're right.
Out there. Were they just practicing? Or
they were. And I'll speak on that here a little bit. A few of them take a lot of initiative, and they really showed in their tests that they did. And we at Overton Power did also. We took some time, and as this shows here, we did an in-house mock test for them. preparing for them. I mean, the tests are getting difficult, and we want to make sure that they're as prepared as we can get them. So we took a day. This is essentially what happens up there during their apprentice test for them. They have instructors on the ground that are monitoring them as they put them through a task on the pole. It's all off the pole with sticks only. No buckets are allowed, and so it's a difficult day. And like Rich said, there's been a couple of apprentices that have really put in a lot of extra effort coming down on Saturdays and taking advantage of that pole yard that we've built there in the at the Overton yard. So,
when they pass, do they get a raise or?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yep.
When they become journeymen or each level?
All through their apprenticeship, it's all designed out with raises, as well as once they
and
journey
you
out.
Accomplish each step, you
yes.
sort of move up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's all based on the lineman scale. It's a percentage of lineman scale. Yep. Is the, each of those steps.
Okay.
Yep, so that's correct. So that's just a couple more of those tests we did during that day. And, any questions or comments?
Tell them how long it took Tanner and Luis to do their apprentice. I mean, were they able to get their hours? Were they able to get everything in 4 years, or did they have to go a little bit longer?
So Luis is a good example. Luis did, you know, it all bases off of, I think it's 1,950 hours or 1,980 hours is what they need to get in a year. And so what by design, is you should be able to get that in a year, but with vacations, with sick, anything like that, then it might throw you behind. But yet also on the other hand, if you work any overtime, then you're able to maintain that and test out. We worked a lot of overtime in the last few years, so Luis took advantage of that, and Luis stayed on pace, and he journeyed out in the 4 years as designed. So we put a lot of effort on them to stay on track and not take advantage of that and not only, I don't know, postpone or waste their time. You know, obviously, you need vacations, and you need to take care of your sick time, but we want them to stay on task with that and not get too far behind. So we put a big effort on that. Any other questions or comments?
I have a comment about that, Kyle. At the Christmas party, I congratulated one of our apprentices, and I said, that has to feel good. And he said, yeah, there's a weight off my shoulder. And before he could even finish, his wife said, the entire house can breathe. So, you know, kudos to the wives, because that is stressful, and those young men have spent a lot of extra time practicing and preparing, and their wives have been home with the kids while they're doing that. So,
well, just to add one other thing, we hired a new groundman recently, and I was, you know, he's not in the apprentice program. He's not out there other than for his own edification. But he took Saturday to go out there and work with the guys too, just so he could learn and be with the guys. So I was really impressed with the way that those guys work together, and was really happy with them. Yeah, very good.
When you're a groundsman, does he say that until there's an opening, or does he move into the apprenticeship automatically?
So we typically have them serve in the groundman position from 1 to 2 years, just so that they get some experience. And then we look at how people are moving up through the program. So when there's a slot ready after a year, and if they're progressing nicely, we go ahead and put them in the program, and if there's not a slot, they'll wait till 2 years. So in reality, for them, from hire at a groundman level to moving through the apprentice program could take five to six years. So it's quite an intense process.
Normally by the time they get to 2 years, though, you've been able to get them into the program?
Yeah. Getting into the program is not difficult. We just need to sign them up, and you know, there's a fee that goes along with that. It's more looking at what are our needs on the crew and where are they at personally in the process. So we look at all those things.
Do you have enough in the program? How is the staffing?
It's good. We're going to have to continue to grow as we go forward because we're adding more customers. But right now, we're in a good spot. And Melissa and I talked with Kyle it's been probably a little over a month now about, you know, what he sees for the future. And right now, he thinks he's in a good spot, but we continue to evaluate that. And when we're when we're ready to add, we'll come back to you guys and let you know where we think we're at and when we think we need to hire some more people for the crew. If there's no more questions, Kevin, we'll have you do the sub-ops report.
All right. That's going to be pretty short tonight. So the Tortoise and Sandhills buildings were in pretty bad disarray. It's been a while since we've done any maintenance, and the eaves were, the paint was flaking off and starting to get a little bit, looking pretty bad. And the building itself had, there was a big vent fan right here with a big hole that we'd patched, and lots of patchwork in it. So the sub-ops crew, they've been working off and on this for 3 or 4 months now, patching holes and sanding and scraping paint and stuff. Well, this week there, they got to see the fruits of their labors. We got a fresh new paint job on Sandhills and Tortoise building. So good for another, 5 years or so, and we'll look at it again. So it's looking good.
That looks great, Kevin.
Yeah, it does. They did a good job. So, yeah, there was a lot of cracks, a lot of holes. This one over here, where we would enter over here to our cable trays to come up and enter right there. They patched that. You can't even tell it's been patched. So they did a really good job on that.
They've
been doing that in their spare time, and they did a really good job.
They hid all the bullet holes in sand.
So every month we do quite an extensive sub-inspection on every one of the subs. They get inspected quite thoroughly. This is Mesquite Substation, which is the one down in the middle of town. They're off of First South and an Arrowhead. This is a feeder. And we use an infrared camera. It's one of the tools we use is an infrared camera to detect hot spots. So what you've got here is this is what it looks like. It's a little bit different angle, but you can kind of tell this is what we're looking at. So this one would be there. That one would be the center. And this one is the center, and this one is the right-hand side. So right here you see the X mark where it's pinpointing the temperature. This one's 170. This one's 203, and this one's 58. It was a cool morning. I would say it was in the mid-50s that morning. So this one's about normal. This one was 170, this one was 203 degrees. So not real hot, but it raised some concerns. So what they did is they de-energized this bay, and that hot spot is right here in these connections. They took these connections apart, cleaned them up real good, and tightened them back up, fixed the problem. So that infrared camera detected that. It could have gone quite a long time without a problem, but eventually it would have caused a problem. That heating would have made that spot get hotter and hotter and hotter. Eventually it would have caused a problem. So the infrared camera is a really good tool we use.
So you prevented two outages.
This is on that same bay, and this is a disconnect switch. This is what it looks like in real time. And the heated point is right here at that connection. And all they really had to do is tighten that nut up. It's got a nut and a bolt through, and the nut's got a locking mechanism on it. And all they had to do is tighten it up to where it had a little bit of resistance in it, and worked it a little bit, and threw it back in. It fixed the problem too. So there's another hot spot that was fixed. That one wasn't too bad, 115. But they had it dead. They just took care of it. So that's something that they do in their sub-inspection and maintenance. They go through and they inspect and find something wrong, and they take care of it. So just a lot of preventive maintenance. And that's really all I've got for today. If you have any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Melissa, let's go to interim GM CEO.
Well, I feel like we were just here 2.5 weeks since I've reported to you guys. So I'm continuing to work. We are continuing to work on the NITS transition with NV Energy. That is a process. So we are working through that. We have a call scheduled for tomorrow with them to work through some of the things, and Tenasca has been very helpful with that. A piece of this needs to be completed no later than December 31st. And so we will work to make sure that stays on track. And on December 1st, I took over the last department. I took over the administrative department. So that completes that transition that we've been working on for the last few months. and I am continuing to finish up the Fitch rating. That is supposed to go to committee this week. When that goes to committee, they then give us 24 hours to review their finding, and then we can dispute any inaccuracies or have discussion with them, and then at that point it's completed. So we're anticipating that call for, I'm thinking Thursday. We should get that, and then we'll report back to you guys what those findings were on that rating. And that's all I've been doing for the last couple weeks.
We just had a rate increase. Do you submit that we're having a rate increase to them?
Yes.
And so they see what we're doing as far as income and expenditures.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, they keep abreast of all that information. You know, we let them know where we think we are in the rate increase cycle. We let them know about our existing power contracts. So usually a year in advance of a power contract expiring, they're talking to us about contracts and what are we doing, what are we seeing out there. So they stay very much on top of all the things that can affect the finances in the power company. They do a very good job.
They send us about 3 pages, 2.5 pages of questions and data that they want for us to submit. So Jonathan worked with me on getting all of that information together and sent over to them. And then we have a call, a Zoom meeting with them. And then we've had probably 3 or 4 email follow-ups where we've solidified information or given a little bit more detail that they've had in their preparation of going to committee.
Our reading stays about the same consistently, though, doesn't it?
If we say our prayers and eat our vitamins, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Melissa. We just concluded our 14th annual holiday food drive, and I want to congratulate the customer service department who headed that up. We had employees internally who contributed to that. We've also worked with the schools on that, and we received some very nice recognition and thank you from the local food banks who really appreciated the food and the timing of when we received that. So that went very well, and thank you, Christy, for heading that up. Appreciate that. In regard to the rate increase that we announced last week, we sent out letters to all of the commercial customers, so all small commercial and large industrial. We sent a letter explaining the rate increase. There was also a good press release that Vernon wrote that was in the progress. And we haven't received a lot of questions, so I think that the information that we got out there has explained what we're doing. We have had a couple of inquiries at the front desk, but not a lot. So I imagine at this point people kind of understand that, and then we'll get more questions when it goes into place and bills get a little bit higher, and that's when people will come in and want a little more information on that. So I think we've got out there what we need to so far.
No real kickback or
no. We've tried to explain that the only reason we're doing this is because our power cost has gone up. That's the only thing that's driving that. And most people are seeing that with everything, especially in business. That's what we hear from some of them is, hey, everything's going up, which is bad, but they understand that we have to go up just like everybody else does. So, I mean, they're not happy about it, but they understand it. And that's the unfortunate situation that we're in. Wanted to let you know, we had some things going on with NREA. First of all, I met with the executive director a couple of weeks ago to do the performance review. And during that review, our executive director submitted her resignation, that she's going to resign from the...
That must have been one crappy review.
It was. It really put a damper on it. She's going to stay till April. She'll get us through the legislative session, and we'll stay on to hopefully train a replacement. So One of the things I want to let you know that they asked me to be on the search committee to head that up, so I will be focusing some time on that to help find her replacement. We hope to get an ad out here. I have that mostly done. We should have that completed this week and have it out on the street by the end of this week with a deadline for applications of January 17th. And hopefully we can move fairly quickly to get somebody in place so that they can be trained.
Well, what kind of places do you post it?
Well, NRECA has a website that posts jobs, APPA, you know, all the trade organizations do. And we'll put it in the magazines and some different things like that. And I'm going to ask all of the utilities to post it on their websites. And then we'll send out invitations to people that we're interested in. So we had somebody steal all our executive director. We won't hesitate to steal somebody else's.
Very good. So,
so.
Do you know where she's going?
Yeah, she accepted a government relations position with Arizona Electric Power Company, APCO. So darn them.
Darn Dave Luttrell.
Yeah. Jack and Melissa and I went out to our NREA meeting, our regular board of directors meeting that we held in Pahrump. We finalized our budget and took care of business there. Even though we're doing some bigger things in NREA, you know, losing Carolyn's not good, but our plan is still in place. We plan to hire executive director. We still plan to hire a government relations person. We still are going to maintain an event coordinator, but we don't see our dues changing for the next year. So that's the good news in this, is we should stay pretty static for the next year, and we'll move forward. I was telling everybody there, this is the fifth time during my tenure that we've had to find a new executive director at NREA. It's a very intensive job. If we can get somebody to do it for 5 or 7 years, that's about all we can expect, and that's what we got out of Carolyn. So we'll do it again, and next time they have to pick somebody, I won't be doing it. So I'm happy about that. I just also wanted to tell you that we were planning on leaving for Washington, D.C. tomorrow to do just a fly-in to meet with legislators. But as our executive director talked to them, she wasn't getting much commitment for meetings. We're at a lame duck conference or a lame duck congress. They weren't really willing to meet. There's recesses going on. We just didn't think it was going to be productive, so we canceled the Washington, D.C. fly-in. So won't be doing that. So that's my report, unless you have some questions for me. Okay. Thank you.
We were doing a land purchase thing?
Yes.
Is there any update on that?
Last I heard from Randall, they were working on getting the zoning changed. That was contingent. They accepted our offer, and it was contingent that they get that zoning changed before we purchase it, and that's where we're at. Good, thank you. I was just getting to that. Okay, Jonathan will give us our financial report.
All righty. Thank you. Excited to be here. For November, we're going to begin on the our statement of operations. But we're going the wrong way here. There we go. So on line one, operating revenues for November in column D, we have $3,622,000. Our line three cost of purchase power was $1,830,000. That does include some estimates because of the early date of our board meeting was moved up, and so there are some estimates in that figure. Line 20, our total cost of electric service is $3,120,000. Our line 22 interest, Received on investments, $113,527. And our line 29 patronage capital and margins for November were totaled at $615,461, which brings our year-to-date margins on the same line to $11,542,000. On the asset side of our balance sheet, on line 5, our net utility plant closed with a value of $134,408,000. We had investments in associated organizations on line 8, line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 material and supplies, all contributing to our total line 29 total assets of $184,523,000. Then our liability and equity side, the line 36, total margins and equities of $127,082,000. Our line 43, total long-term debt, line 48, accounts payable, and again, all contributing to our line 57, total liabilities of $184,523,000. Up at the top, we have the detail of our cash held in our checking accounts. We close with a value of $4,445. And then in our Morton investment account, close with a value of $30,489,000. And our Goldman Sachs account at $622,797.
If I could stop you right there for a second, Jonathan, you're seeing that Morton account drop down a little bit, you know, as we go from month to month, and you're going to continue to see that as we're doing these capital projects. And just wanted to just remind you that that's what's happening there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
On the right side shows the profit, which is the good side.
That's the good side too. Yeah, but that's going to go away too.
So on the next slide here, the investments in our Morton account displayed in the pie graph by security type, and then in the bar graph by security duration. And as Minna said, a lot of that we're using for our projects, and a lot of that is extremely short, held in extremely short investments. So obviously, we're going to be using that here very soon. As of November 30th, OPD has a total of 18,722 customers. So our ratios, our financial ratios, our modified debt service coverage ratio for November, with estimates throughout the end of the year, including December, is 2.87. Our equity as a percentage of assets, 68.87%, and our times interest earned ratio is 8.21. Mm-hmm. Connection fees for November, we had a total of 29, and these were valued at $30,550. Again, these are connection fees received, not actual connection fees or connections in place. Our current billing arrangements, we had 17 residential, or currently have 17 residential billing arrangements valued at $2,647, and currently have no commercial billing arrangements.
Is that extra low? That seems.
It's always interesting, because in the summer, you know, when people have high bills, those go up. And then in these nicer months, it goes down. And then we hit Christmas, and then they go back up again. And then they'll go down until summer hits.
This is also as a result of us posting our board meeting 4 days into the month. So there hasn't been many people making arrangements yet.
Helpful.
Yes. Yes, if we reported to you in 2 weeks, that would have grown.
Okay, that's great.
And our roundup program balances are displayed there in each valley. Yeah, we've had more growth over here, and so more roundup donations.
Do we have promote the roundup when people sign up? So everybody signs up has the opportunity to.
Yep.
Okay. In both valleys?
Yes, Byron. Good grief. Maybe a little extra if they come in a green shirt or something, but.
The roundup.
It's embarrassing.
They just make sure they always charge me O2 or something like that.
You know, we need to check into this, but I have the feeling that some people sign up for Roundup when their kids are in school, and when they're out of school, they take their names off.
Oh, I need to cancel mine.
Yeah. Yeah. And Christy's saying yes, that's what's happening.
I don't think so. I signed up after my kids graduated from school.
Get us back on track, Jonathan.
Okay. This is the detail of our loans held with CFC, our long-term debt. Our next quarterly payment is due at the end of this month, December, an amount of $1,485,000. That payment is scheduled to be made on time and paid in full. Our total outstanding debt balance is $47,619,000. And our average rate of interest on all of these loans with our discounts is at 3.35%. Here's the detail of our revenue by customer class, and then towards the bottom we've included, enlarged that on this slide here. This is the summary at the bottom, and down in the light blue, our monthly cost of power is at 5.68 cents kilowatt hour, and this is again, there's estimates in there because of the early time of our board meeting. And our monthly revenue is 10.67 cents, and then our 2024 average cost is 4.99 cents.
We're hoping for one more month of sub five.
Huh? Yes, sir. So we will, we'll report that next month, and that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan.
All right, thank you.
Those are our reports. Thank you.
We'll go on to item H, review and possible approval of the 2025 expense budget for possible action.
Well, Melissa is ready after a lot of hard work to present the budget to you, so I'll turn the time to her.
Thank you. Clicker won't work.
I barely touched it.
Okay.
One more time. I moved it for you just to see if you could fix it.
No.
It's Jonathan's fault.
Stop going haywire.
There you go.
I'm not touching it. This is what happens to me every time. Normally, IT just has to walk into the room and it miraculously fixes itself. Okay. It still doesn't work, Steve. There we go.
Okay.
It might have been user error. Okay. We are anticipating a total revenue for 2025 of $60,120,000. Of that, 64% will go to power cost, 3% to interest on our debt service, 5% to depreciation, 10% to payroll, and 6% to benefits, as well as 2% to other, giving us 10% left going towards margins. I've given you guys 3 months of history. I want you to please note that the 2024 includes estimates for the months of September through December. We worked on this mostly in October and November, and we hadn't got all of the actuals on the power billings for September. So this does still include estimates. I've also given you a forecast for 3 years into the future, 25, 26, and 27. Tonight, I'm just going to focus on 25 and 26 just so that it's a little bit larger on the screen, but the information is out there, and I'm happy to go back and look at past years or future years if you would like. So for 2025, We are anticipating energy sales of 477 million kWh. You can see that for 2024 in the center, we sold 466 million kWh. If you go back 1 year prior in 2023, we sold 403 million. We've talked a lot about the weather and the growth that we have seen in energy sales. As you guys know, I am always incredibly conservative, but I want us to be realistic about the growth that we are looking at. And we can look back and say, we have not had this much growth in energy sales. That is a little bit of anomaly, but we have always had growth. So I did not want to estimate that we were going to stay stagnant. So I did 2.5% growth on those sales. That brings in revenue from energy of $58,120,000. I anticipate about $2 million in non-electric revenue. If you look for 2024, we have about $2.5 million, and in 2023, we had $3.2 million. We had large industrial customers that came in those years that paid. We had even, it was over $4 million in 2023. As I visited with our engineering department, we have a lot of people talking to us, but nobody has delivered deposits yet. And so I just, in an effort to be conservative, I said about $2 million. That's a reasonable number. If we make more than that in electric revenue, other electric revenue, it just simply adds to our margins. We anticipate getting about $250,000 in capital credits from our cooperatives that we are invested in. That brings us down to energy purchased. If you look on cost per kWh, you can see that we anticipate at the end of the year to be about 4.96 cents per megawatt. If you look in 2025, that cost is going to 7.68. We've talked about this for many months about the cost going up. We know that we have our hydro, and we will be counting on our solar to come online as well.
In 26, that drops down about 50 cents. Is that because we have the solar all year?
All year, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we only get the solar is anticipated to come on in July. And then the other thing that I did was that I confirmed with CRC, what they anticipated the layoffs to be from the industrial customers that we've been getting for the last number of years. It's always been, well, they're going to take it the next year. You're going to lose your layoff the next year. We've been anticipating this. After some really good conversations with them, it was said they're not going to take their layoff for the next couple of years, and so I've budgeted that in for the next 3 years. But on the third year going out, that has been reduced some.
That's
so
hydro.
Yep, that's those hydro layoffs. So then we did transmission, distribution, consumer accounts, and administrative in general. I anticipate that all of those expenses are going to go up by about 5% is what I estimated that at. We have seen higher than that in years past. But when I looked at what we're seeing, what our trends are right now and how much more we're paying, 5% seemed accurate, as well as we have retirements coming that is reducing some of our payroll. And so that contributed to that decision as well. We have depreciation. I increased by 3% because we are closing larger jobs. And we know as those large jobs close, we've got to start depreciating that infrastructure. And then our interest on our CFC gives us net margins before other income of $5,193,000. Now, we know that that is a drastic reduction from what we have had in margins in the past. That was a strategic decision that we have made to ensure that the entire rate increase for our power cost was not borne by our customers. And so we have other income of interest, I put at $950,000. Chad, it was hard for me. I wanted to put that $500,000, but you you've shamed me into being a little bit more realistic with that. So I did put 950. I do think that we're going to see quite a drastic reduction because we are taking money from those investments. That gives us, we have non-operating margins, other, a loss of about 300,000. That's gain or loss on sale of items. We have old, we have aging switches and transformers that we know that we are getting rid of. So I gave us $300,000 that I thought we would take a loss on those. And then our other deductions of $164,000 gives us a margin for the year anticipated for 2025 of $5,679,000.
And if you go back to our capital project discussion that we had last month, you saw that in our capital projects, we estimated at that time our margins were about $5.5 million. So this is a little bit, this shows a margin a little bit higher than we showed at that time. So that hopefully provides a little bit of cushion in there if things stay like they should.
I have a question. Depreciation. Why do we show that? I mean, usually that's used for business for tax deduction purposes. Mm-hmm. That's not us. Why?
But because we follow government accounting, we're required still to report depreciation. You are right. There is no tax benefit for us, but the government system of accounting requires that we do depreciation.
The government?
The government.
Okay, so of that operating budget, this is a breakdown of where we anticipate those sales coming from. So where will it come from? Residential sales will make up about 49%, irrigation 0.3%, commercial and industrial that are 1,000 kVA or less is 18%, commercial and industrial over 1,000 kVA is at 24%, street lights come in at 0.7, and other sales to public authority, which are all of our municipal customers and our school districts, make up 8%. So where will all of that revenue go? We're anticipating $60 million in revenue. 64% will go to power cost. If you guys remember last year, that was at
58%?
49%, and now we've went to 64. Transmission expense, 1%. Distribution expense, 8%. Consumer expense, 3%. Admin in general at 6%. Depreciation hangs tight at 5%. And interest on long-term debt is still at 3%. Non-operating margins is at 1%, giving us margins at 9%. Last year, it was about 20%. What I like to give you guys on this is a breakdown of each individual line on the pro forma. This gives you a good understanding and the ability to go through and read and say what makes up each one of those lines and where do we see increasing or do we have questions on something. So this is a breakdown of that revenue. So we just talked about the $2 million that we anticipate coming in from other electric revenue. This is where we see that coming from. And I won't read every single line because I know you don't want to stay here all night, but just for example, we anticipate about $248,000 coming from penalties. One of the things that we try to do to help people with reducing those penalties is sign up for e-bill and sign up for ACH draft so that their bill is automatically paid, because many times it isn't that people can't pay their bill, it's that they forget to pay their bill. And we have a very good system. For your very first time, if you are delinquent, they don't charge you a penalty. And but there are people who are penalized. So this is a breakdown of all of those non-electric charges. Here is a breakdown of our power cost. Of course, again, this is 64% of our expenses, and we're very familiar with what goes into that. We then have a breakdown of all of our distribution expense and distribution maintenance. A couple of notes that I wrote tonight that are just really drives this home. When Kyle talks about going out and doing a maintenance program where we're identifying transformers that need to be replaced so that we can take a planned outage and keep that controlled and replace that infrastructure when it's needed, that's maintenance. When Kevin sends his crews out to infrared camera the substation and then they tighten up all of those that infrastructure to avoid outages, that's all maintenance. So that drives home the point of where some of our money is going and why it is so important. This is our consumer accounts expense and customer service and information expense. One thing that I did want to highlight to you guys, in 2024, we saw an increase in the expense for customer service information. Most of that is directly related to our demonstration trailer that we put together at the fair. That was very, very well received. It's an important service that we provide to our community, and I think it's money absolutely well spent. It doesn't mean that every year is going to be that, but in 2025, I did anticipate the same, because Kyle has reported in the last couple of months that we've had other utilities that have asked that their staff is educated on working around power lines. We're going to continue to use that trailer, and it might, like I said, it might not be the same every single year, but I think for these first couple years, it's going to be in high demand, and we need to put some money towards it. And so I've already included that into the budget.
Why did customer billing go up so much in 23? 9.5.
Most of that was that we had moved for succession planning staff into the billing department to learn for replacement of retirements. We had two retirements from the billing department just this year.
Okay.
And then here is our administrative in general. Here is depreciation and amortization, the interest that we pay on our long-term debt, and the amortization of our debt defeasement. Here is the breakdown of interest from our investments and our non-operating margins, leaving us again an anticipated margin for 2025 of $5,679,000. Now on to the cash. The capital budget, there are a couple of things that I do want to point out. You guys have already approved the capital budget, but one key thing that it's important for us to talk about tonight is in 2025, you see that with the margins that we anticipate and the spending that we anticipate, it's right in the middle of the page. The capital improvements shows $22,477,000. That is not the exact amount of the budget that you guys approved, because we're going to spend cash in different months than what it has been approved. There is going to be some cash that is spent in 2025 that is carried over from approvals in 2024, the same for 2026. But one key thing that I want you to see is that with that anticipated spending and those anticipated margins, we have an ending cash balance for 2025 of $12,029,000. If you go over to 2026, at the top, about four down, you see that I have added $3 million for debt service. The reason that I did that is because in our last strategic planning session, we said that we were going to keep our cash balance at about three months' power bills at a time. So in order to maintain that $10 million balance, I had to put $3 million in there. I'm not asking you guys to borrow tonight. I'm just telling you that in order to maintain the balance that you guys had set, we would need to borrow $3 million to maintain our $10 million bank balance. Now, we are going to plan for a strategic planning session in 2025, and we'll relook and discuss both borrowing and what we want to set those balances at that time. But I wanted to make you guys aware of that it would require that $3 million in order to maintain our $10 million balance.
Well, and in reality, with the wholesale cost of power going up, you're going to have to relook at that number, and $10 million may not be sufficient. You may need to be a little higher. But again, as Melissa said, that's a decision you'll make at the strategic planning.
Okay, so the next few pages are, again, the capital budget that you guys have already approved. I simply copied and pasted what was at last month's meeting and approved, but I like to put it on here in case you guys have other questions, or sometimes when you start looking at expenses, you're like, I thought that was on the capital budget, so it just makes it so it's tied back. I like to give this to you all at once so that you can review it easily. So again, this is just the same capital budget that you've already approved. And then the last thing is expenses that are included in the budget. We go through a lengthy process of Scott's IT team, specifically Merlin, has set up an incredible way for us to submit all of our requests for our budgets by department. The managers allow their staff to go in and place in their requests. They then review those requests, approve or deny. Then they bring that to Mendes and I. We go through that at staff meeting, approve or deny. They rework their budgets. We do it again. And then at the end, these are the things that we are saying we have approved and included in what we say are the expenses or the increase in the expense for the budget. But I want you guys to know what that is too. I want you to see the detail. If you have a question on a specific item, the managers are here and they can explain to you why it is that they need what they've asked for. And you guys all have the ability as a board to say no, and we will adjust the budget accordingly.
I do have a question.
Okay.
Replace remaining poles, 25 poles, $250,000, $10,000 a pole to replace it. Is that what it is? That seems like
That includes, let me look at the right line where we at here.
It's in the Arrow Canyon.
That's because it's inaccessible. There's not a line road to those poles. It's out across ridge tops that can't get trucks to, so it's
you're going up the side of a mountain?
Yep.
So is that where they set with the helicopter before? Yeah. So we're talking about a helicopter set.
They had some helicopter sets. They also brought in that, what do you call that? It's got the spider excavator.
Yeah, that's why they're so expensive. We looked at going underground. Randall would speak on it better. I looked at going underground up the road. That was very expensive, so this was the best solution. Replace the poles with steel, with ductile iron poles. Last we talked, and just a lot of labor.
Very expensive per pole, isn't it?
Very.
Do you remember those pictures that they showed you of that piece of equipment that climbed up those rocks? And remember, he waved at the employees. Yeah, it was a project. So.
It's going to be similar to that.
Okay, if there's nothing else on engineering, we will go to the finance department. And then we have line operations here, too. So both Jonathan and Kyle are prepared and ready to answer any questions that you guys have for them. Jonathan is brand new and just hoping you guys are going to ask him something.
Are you getting a good cordless tool set, or is it generic?
Yeah, it's going to my office.
Good.
It's a DeWalt one for the
warehouse. I do notice you have a lot of money for training, which is really good. Really appreciate that because we're sort of not where training's available too much, and it's important that we spend some money developing our employees and making sure they have the skills they need. So I like that.
And we had a lot of discussions in our staff meeting about being conscientious of all types of training. One of the things that we've talked about is it's really convenient to take classes via Zoom because you don't have to leave, but it's really kind of boring and you just sit in your office with the door closed all day, and even though it's live and it's supposed to be interactive, it isn't the same. You don't get the networking. It doesn't mean that you don't learn from the class, but we're really cognizant of the fact that we have to temper that Zoom training with some in-person training as well. And then we also talked about bringing people in-house and doing multi-department training instead of sending people, bring someone in, and that's on the agenda for the strategic planning.
One of the things, and you'll see this ratio later, but OPD has more customers per employee than most other utilities. And the fact that you guys encourage us to do training and that we have a good trained staff helps our people achieve that. They're able to do more, and that means we can have a leaner workforce because they're better trained and able to do more things. And I think it also contributes to the fact that we've been over 7 years without a lost time accident. So the training that you're allowing us to do is really paying off, I think. I think it's been a good investment, and I appreciate the fact that you work with us on that.
Let's just comment. In my prior life, I was involved in a big study with California teachers, and we found how poor remote learning was compared to in-class learning. And the students were about 50% less trained in different classes. I worked on that project for a couple of years.
I have taken online classes, and I swore that I was not going to open my email on the other monitor and be, tempted to not necessarily pay attention. And it always lasts 6 or 7 minutes, and then, ding, the email goes off. And it's hard. It's hard, especially we had some of our finance department, I think your classes lasted 6 or 7 hours. That's a long day for them to sit in their office with the door closed by themselves. So nobody came and begged me to take any more of those. So they were excited to take classes, but
very poor learning experience. Yeah. So
with all of our new lines, is that right away you feel comfortable that's enough to continue to maintain the right away with just putting a lot more line out there?
Most of the lines underground though, we're putting
in. Well, we had again a really good discussion on that, and we're trying some new things. We're hoping that some of the new things we're going to try are going to help keep that down, because originally that budget was a lot higher to maintain the right-of-way. So we'll see how it goes. Okay. If it doesn't work, you might see that bounce up some more.
Is
that the one like where we have a contractor, we contracted rates, and it's as needed, or is this like in-house,
our own folks?
No, if you're talking about tree trimming?
No, the line...
Right-of-way clearance?
Yeah.
So that's a contract, yeah.
Yeah, and that is tree trimming. That is what that is. Right-of-way maintenance is the...
Tree trimming and brush.
Like the line, road maintenance.
Yeah, that's on there as well. It's at $90,000.
Yeah, that's right below hotline tools, right in the middle.
Line road maintenance. And then
that's the one I was talking about.
And that one is like use...
Like we have contracted rates, and you just, if they don't need any work, you don't do anything. Yes. If you need it, it's at that rate.
Yeah.
Yep. Kyle, will you speak on kind of your thought process on the right-of-way clearing that you had done so much because of the wet year?
Yeah. So this year we did a lot getting all that tree trimming done. The river crossings were a big hurdle to get done, mostly in this valley, and as well as SNWA up in Warm Springs. That took a lot of funds. We're hopeful that taking those down to dirt bought us some time. In the meantime, we've also got some other plans that we're going to try to mitigate the growth on that. So we put a lot of effort into it this year. It's all based on the rainfall that comes with that, but that's why our efforts, our spending was so high on that, and where our budget is set at for next year for that.
So we will see that will continue to be cyclical, because again, it is like everything else in our budget, dependent on the weather. If we have rainy years, that year isn't necessarily going to be the year, but the year after and the year after that, we're going to have to go back in and do more clearance. So Kyle is very conscientious of monitoring that budget.
I guess that's the one positive of not getting any rain.
What I'm hoping is that Kyle is going to finally get the crystal ball that tells me what the weather's going to be for the next 5 years, and it'll make my budgeting easier because he needs it for his right-of-way clearance. So,
I'll keep looking.
Okay, perfect. Here is the substation operations department's budget. If you have any questions, Kevin is primed and ready.
Yeah, on the battery replacement, do you just automatically replace them at a certain time, or do you wait for a failure or weakness in the battery?
We're on a rotation, so the batteries are good for roughly 12 years. And so we've got it on a rotation to where all of our subs get a new bank of batteries, and we keep on that rotation.
So you do it on time as opposed to failure.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want it to fail. We want it to replace it before it fails. And we do test those batteries every month, right along with that sub-inspection, so.
I suppose if you test them, you get some failures, so too, don't you, once in a while?
No, they're pretty reliable batteries. We've bought batteries that we feel like are a good, reliable battery, and they have been. So every now and then you'll see one that will drop down below, but we can usually replace one or two of those batteries, because it's a battery bank of well, it used to be 60, now it's 12, 10 batteries now. So you can usually buy one to replace one that's dropped down a little bit. But yeah, it's a rotation for like a 12-year rotation on those batteries, 10 to 12.
What type of work needs to be done on that T2 transformer?
On the
hot oil.
Oh, this one up. So we've got a bladder that needs changed out, and then we've also got some leaking on it. So that, and that's not just for that transformer. We've got, I think there was 8 transformers that we're going to be processing the oil in. The inhibitor in the transformers is gone due to processing that we've done on it, and so they need to replenish that inhibitor, and then that hot oil pressing we're going to do. There's 3 or 4 of them that are questionable. We'll hot oil press those also while they're here. So that involves about 6 to 8 transformers.
Okay, and then we have the administrative department if there's any questions for this one.
Mike, go ahead.
As you might guess, I have a question. I actually have an objection. Under the very bottom, one up or two up from the bottom, community outreach. We have to do advertising for new positions and our contracting and stuff like that. And we have some community events and stuff. But I notice in there you have an item for ads at booster clubs. Now, that is a very specific support of a high school team or something, the booster club for that. That's not what the public's money is for. It's for running this district. And that's like a gift to a specific business, which they are a business, as a matter of fact, even though it's a booster club. And it may be, it's nice to support the high schools, which we do with our Roundup program and other events, but giving the money to a booster club for an ad and a thing to get it, a program to get it at an event, just does not seem to meet our purpose as supplying power at the cheapest to our customers. And that affects a very small group, specific group. And I don't think that's right. If you're advertising in a newspaper, general public. But that is a small group, and it's a specific group, and I object to that, and I think it ought to be removed. I know I commented, I think, when I saw the expenditure last year, but we had already approved the budget, but I want to make sure that, in my mind, I don't think we ought to be doing that.
I want to say that money went toward a big OP5 banner that we have at the football field.
Go to football.
Community engagement, youth, locals. We just hired Tanner Hammonds.
Why are we advertising to locals? We're a utility that has a franchise. No one else can compete with us. And it's just like putting an advertisement in the chamber advertisement. They have to go to us. I do see we do that too. But the booster club is way more specific in my mind than even the chamber ad, which since we have a exclusive area, there's no one else to call for power here.
It's kind of an interesting thing, though, Mike, because what you have here is you have almost everybody in the community that does things, that does support, and they have banners or ads in the booster magazine. And I've had more people come to me and say, you know, when we haven't done it, I've had more people come to me and say, why doesn't the power company support the community? It gives us a black eye. And I've had more people complain about not participating than I have about us participating by a large margin. And that's why we do it. And we don't do it every year. Like last year, you know, you made that comment. We didn't do it last year. But we have done it most years. And it's because we get a black eye when we don't do that. And I realize that we are a monopoly, that people have to use us. But I've had a lot of people tell me, you are a monopoly. That's why you should participate with the community. Because we don't have a choice, and we expect you to contribute to the community.
I appreciate participating in the community at large. This is a very specific group of people who support sports in the high schools. Mesquite has a lot of retired people. If they want to donate something, that's fine.
But a lot of those retired...
We should be donating on their behalf of their money, because they paid us.
A lot of those retired people go to the football games and basketball games, though. Yeah, if you have
huge crowds in
there. You do have a huge crowd. You when those stands are full, it's not just parents, it's people from the community.
And it's those old retired people that complain.
Well, not always.
It's a different group. You don't have everyone that reads the paper. I guarantee you, very few of the younger
that's
people
up to
read papers anymore.
Do you know what and that's mean? Why so we're on Facebook.
It's just a matter of reaching another group, trying to reach everyone in the community, whether it's Instagram.
To support the sports. It's not to reach the community. My goodness, you put an ad in there.
Well,
for what?
Well, for us, it is. I don't care how many people support the sports. But like I say, to me, it's avoiding the black eye from not participating, because that's been the bigger issue rather than participating, from what I hear.
We have motorcycle races in Mesquite. We don't advertise there. I mean, there's other events that don't get that money, and it just... Anyway, I object, but that's up to everybody.
If you would like to see us take that out this year, we'll do that.
I
also understand that as a board you need to make a decision too.
I understand.
That should probably be brought as an agenda item.
I don't think it needs. I mean, we're
like
discussing
we
now.
The board would vote on that.
So you can tell us right now whether you would like us to take that out or leave it in.
How much are you paying?
Are we talking $3,000 for that?
It's under the $13,000 line item.
But not all of that goes
exactly.
to the booster.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're paying.
Yeah. We're usually doing what $400 to $500.
$500 per school.
Yes.
$500
per school or $1,000.
Yeah.
I just don't see an issue.
I don't either.
I don't
not
either.
Not even remotely.
That's three.
I think, you know, I think we're going to be a monopoly probably forever. But we have had times when the city of Mesquite has gotten kind of in discussions. I think that PR is vitally important. I think it's important that we're on Facebook messaging. I think it's the newspaper, our weekly thing, and a lot of both of these communities are at those events. I mean, in a small community, our two especially communities, you have a huge following of people. Mm-hmm. It's visible, it's seen, it's supportive. I think that's just peanuts. I mean, that's
attendance important. When there's a game between Mesquite and Moapa, like triples. Mm-hmm. The stands go completely up. Yeah. They don't do that every game.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And it goes hand in hand with our internship program, our tent program. We're pulling from the high school.
Yes, you are.
They're familiar with our logo, our company name. I mean, it's
and that all costs us money, and that's an investment in getting kids safe and explaining about the power system and stuff like that. It just seems important. Supporting a sports team is not, in my opinion. But obviously it's called a minority opinion, so that's okay.
We're dragging this out.
I can tell you, though, at the football games, that's where I get jumped about this more than anywhere else. I get crowds of people. At one game, I literally was surrounded by a crowd of people saying, why aren't you advertising? I see the water district. I see the telephone company. I see every other business. Why aren't you participating with the community? And that's why we did it.
I have just a quick comment. And then let's take a vote. I have gone into events, football games, basketball games in Las Vegas. I've been to them at both of these schools. There is no comparison with the community outreach in these smaller communities like this. These games fill up. I don't care if they're basketball games, wrestling, football, whatever. The communities come out. I have snowbirds. When I had sugars, I used to have snowbirds that they couldn't wait for the Friday night football games because they all wanted to go to the football games. And I'm sure you have the same people up here. It's all part of the outreach to the community. Before we were doing all this outreach to the community, we were taking a lot of crap. And I think it's because of the outreach to the communities and trying to be a part of the community that we've been able to get more favorably looked on. And I think we've heard from both sides. If there's any other different comments, let's hear them, other than the ones that have been made. And otherwise, can we take a vote on if we want to remove it?
Well, the ultimate vote is approval of the overall budget. And in that vote,
we would say with the removal.
The motion is just this, or it is to remove that. Okay. Or to approve the budget with the removal of this. Yes. So it depends on who makes the motion, right?
And where it goes.
And seconds. And then if, for example, the motion was to approve minus support of that, then you'd call for a second. If there isn't one, it dies. Then you wait for a new motion. Motion to approve this as is. Second, then you go on. I mean, that's right. We don't do an individual vote on just that.
It's just, okay. Does anybody want to make a motion?
I still got two slides.
Oh, yeah.
We're not done yet.
I'm so ready.
Then answers my question. No, I do not hear a motion yet. Okay, go for it, Chad.
No, I'll just
keep going.
Two slides,
yeah. Okay. Okay. For our anticipated modified debt service coverage for 2025, we have 1.85. Now, you guys remember that our loan covenants require that we have a 1.35, and that is the average of the last two highest years of our last 3 years is the way that that's calculated. And debt service coverage is required to be at a 1.25. Again, these will be discussed at strategic planning that we will have in 2025, where we will set where do we want those to be and how do we work towards doing that. We worked for a long time to get that modified debt service coverage as well as the equity as a percentage of assets where we wanted it. This is what that calculates out to with our $5.1 million margin. And again, as a board, we will work towards setting new strategies and goals on where we want to go in the future. Our gross electric plant investment, we anticipate in 2025 growing to $199 million. And our equity as a percentage of assets would move to 78.49. That seems a little interesting because our modified debt service coverage is going to go down. But one of the reasons that that's going to happen is because, or we anticipate that happening, is a large reduction in cash. Because you're literally taking your equity and dividing it by your total assets. As assets reduce, that changes that ratio. So I think I was a little aggressive on how much cash I think we're actually going to spend there, but I wanted to just show you guys what I think for modified debt service coverage. And if I come in with equity as a percentage of assets wrong, I'm going to blame Jonathan because he's the new guy.
What is our goal on that right now on the top two?
Jonathan, what is it, 2.35?
Yeah, the minimum is 1.35. Our goal is 1.85.
So you think we're going to hit our goal?
Well, that was just luck, but yes, I did. Okay. That's why I did that. That's what it calculated out to, but I knew that's what you wanted, so yeah. Okay, I anticipate us at the end of the year having 19,190 customers. That would give us 325 meters per employee. The median for the U.S. on that ratio is 295 customers per customer. I'm sorry, per employee. And for the state, the median is 171 customers per employee. And then, of course, I can't finish my report without reporting on our AC. We anticipate in 2025 that will be at 99.99%. We are currently at 99.96% for 2024. to me, that is absolutely incredible that the power was on 99.96% of the time. We did have a gentleman just last month that said, if you guys notice, your power is on is in the nines, and I would like it to be at the hundreds. So we have some unrealistic expectations by customers, but we know that if we can work towards 99.99% of the time, that's phenomenal. I've reported to this many, many times. For the first probably 5 or 6 years that I submitted our reports to CFC, they questioned me on this, believing there's no way that we had that few of outages, because we have utilities that have ice storms that are out for 7 days multiple times a year, and their percentage is down, you know, less than 50.
What are our neighbors?
I don't know. I don't know. I could tell you.
That's not one that they show on the key ratios is what they are that I least that I remember.
It is on key ratios. I'll tell you next month. I can tell you what the median for the state is.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I ask, does that also include planned power outages?
Yes, it does.
So I mean, basically, if you're working on your lines at all, mm-hmm. keeping them in shape.
You can't be 100%.
You can't be at 100%.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But one of the things that Kyle's team is really, and substations as well, is very conscious of is making planned outages as short as possible in the effort to avoid an unplanned outage that lasts for longer. And it's so much more contained. Kyle knows exactly where he needs to work, and then the sub-ops teams does all of the switching to make sure that the area affected is as small as physically possible.
And we have a lot of programs that help do this. You know, Kevin showed you their inspection program. I know that engineering goes out and does pole testing so that we can change out poles before they fail. And Kyle's crew goes out and does that. And they have various things that they use to keep poles in good shape. But sometimes it's not changing them out. Maybe it's adding some structural strength on the lower part of the pole, but we have a lot of programs with testing and monitoring and changing out that contribute to that. And I hope that you recognize that we're doing all that we can to keep the power on.
And that's what I'm trying to say. It's realistic. It's not pie in the sky. It's realistic. You're taking good care of us. Thank you.
Thanks.
That concludes my presentation, unless you have more questions.
Your graph is a little distorted, though. Because if you actually had a graph showing 0 to 100, that 99 would still be at the top. I mean, this is a graph that's showing maybe 90 and above only, 90% and above, where normal graphs start at 0. So we do a much better job than even that indicates, which is pretty impressive.
Yes, our lowest is at 99.87. And I am going to take this under advice, because this is the third year you've beat me up over the discrepancy in my graph on that. So next year, Jonathan is going to do a much better job.
I hope so.
No pressure,
Jonathan.
Okay, that concludes my presentation.
A question. One of the things that we were concerned about leaving Morgan Stanley and going to Nebraska was bandwidth charges.
Yep.
And was it in there? I didn't see it.
Well, it's all up just under $1 million. $920,000 is what we...
What was that? I couldn't find it.
It's all lumped in 555, which is power cost.
Okay, so you
yep,
didn't see
we
it.
don't have a separate account for bandwidth charges.
Okay, so you're budgeting about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
What was last year? What was 2024?
I know it got hit with bandwidth one time.
I want to say 13,000. The year before that, we had 689,000 at the end of the year.
We had a big one.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. Yep. But I believe that this year is, it's under $20,000.
Pretty low this year.
Yes.
So it was a huge increase in our accounts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
And as we work through that process with them and scheduling, we will do our very best. But a lot of those bandwidths were set on what they anticipated for our sales as well. And that is dependent on hydrology, on performance of our solar, and the weather. So,
because solar is really bumped it up.
Yes.
The cost. That's a big jump this year, $10,000 more just installed it.
Yeah.
Another question is, we keep focusing on 2025's margins being low and being a pretty big hit, but you, on 2026, you're showing it bumping back up to 8 million plus. I mean, is that...
The solar, the solar from January to June that we are buying at market rate is costing us $2.2 million. So that's a big portion of it. And then the anticipated layoff from hydro fluctuates by the Bureau of Reclamation's, what is it called, their 24-month?
Yeah, 24-month study.
24-month study. They anticipated that we were going to get a little bit more next year. So that reduced that power cost a little bit. Then it then they anticipated we were going to get less in 2027, so that bumped our power cost up a little bit.
I'm just happy to see that, because after our rate increase discussion, I was under the impression that it's going to be between 5 and 6 was kind of the goal moving forward. But it's, that's not the case at all.
Well... Let's see.
Very far out in the future, but.
So 2025, we anticipated being at 5.6 million, 2026 at 8.1 million, and 2027 at 6.8 million. So there is fluctuation there. Yeah. Now, I'm anticipating growth on expenses that I'm not sure, and we did 2.5% growth on sales for those years, too. So, again, this is stuff that we're going to have to talk about in the coming months and in the next few months strategically. Where do we want to set those margins? Where do we want, what recovery do we want from our rates? And where do we want our cash balances to sit? So you as a board will give us direction and we'll start working towards those.
And then the interesting thing is we know what our power costs are going to be from, you know, for 25, 26, 27. And then, we're going to start. We, as in Melissa and her team, will start negotiating those in about a year and a half, and we'll see where power prices are, if they're, you know, gonna, if they're gonna come down a little bit, or if they're gonna continue to go up. That's gonna be a real interesting discussion.
We'll be discussing borrowing and power contracts and the timing of that with both markets, the borrowing market, the power market, and the payoff of our loans that we have in 2028. So we have really fun discussions coming.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, thank you. I'm just curious about those bandwidths. That's where it's at.
Are there any other questions or comments on the budget? Okay, do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the budget as presented.
I second
it. Okay, it's been moved and seconded and third. That we approve the budget as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay,
we're good. I abstain.
You're abstaining?
Yep.
Okay. Item J, review and possible... Whoops, no, I went too far. Item I, review and possible approval of the 2025 board meeting schedule for possible action.
Okay, Melissa's prepared a schedule. I'll let her go over that with you.
We have typically held our meetings on the third Wednesday of every month at 3 o'clock. We want to present to you our anticipated schedule with just a couple of notes. For January, I would like for us to move that to this January 22nd, as I have a conflict on the third Wednesday of the month. The remainder would be on the third Wednesday, and there was...
I would move December to the...
And December... can I see your calendar? I didn't bring my phone in here. Is that the third? That is
the third
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay, so December 17th would still be the third Wednesday of the month. Now, we have in the past, like now, we've moved it up even a week further, but Jonathan and his team had 3 days to prepare financials, and you guys got a lot of estimates in those financials. So you could leave it at the 17th where you get a little bit better information from your financial report, but it's a little bit closer to the holiday, or we could move it up a month, or move it up a week A week. We could move it up
right
a week.
After the November meeting.
I like that. Since November, December at the same time.
And then I also just wanted your guys' input to ensure that you were all comfortable with Wednesdays at 3 o'clock, that schedule still continue to work for you guys for 2025.
I think we ought to move the December meeting. I think it makes it convenient. A lot of people travel to be with family and stuff at Christmas time. And although the estimates, I mean, we're not making a big decision on the estimates.
Correct.
We're just seeing them, look at them, say, okay, we're same sort of thing. So it seemed like a good idea. We've done it a number of years, and it seems to work out, even though they are estimates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is the date
December
of that?
The 10th.
10th.
I'll make that correction on the schedule.
Did you make a motion?
I'll make a motion. We move that the December 17th meeting to the
10th
of December.
And approve
all the rest of the dates as presented.
So there's been a motion to approve the calendar as presented, with the exception of December 17th meeting being moved to December 10th. All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, no.
We have a second.
We have a second.
Who's, somebody seconded?
I'll second
it. Dale seconded.
Thanks, Dale.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Item J, review and possible approval for the general manager CEO to execute future non-disclosure agreements for possible action.
So we had this discussion at our last board meeting that with the growth that's coming on, we're having a lot of entities coming in that want non-disclosure agreements or confidentiality agreements in place. We talked a little bit about what shape those are in. We have a lot of them who are just trying to protect their information. There's no cost to the district, and I think that from our discussion last week that you guys felt comfortable with us signing those types of non-disclosure agreements after Byron has approved those. And then coming to the next board meeting and just letting you know that who we signed an NDA with so that you were aware of it. If there were anybody that wanted a non-disclosure agreement that required some type of commitment or that there was a cost to the district, we would not do that without bringing that to the board first. So that's what we're asking for, is the ability to sign NDAs that really don't commit us to do anything but exchange information without board approval, and then just informing you afterwards.
Okay. I felt like that sat pretty good with everybody when we talked about it last time.
Yeah, I thought so.
And accept staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve for the general manager CEO to execute future non-disclosure agreements as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Item K, review and possible approval of changes to the 2024 organizational chart to make the contract customer relations a full-time position for possible action.
Melissa and I have talked about this, and Melissa has done a lot of work on this, and I'll let her present this to you.
In July, we hired a part-time contract position to help with customer relations / public relations and do writing for us. That person was the only applicant that applied for that position and has wowed us in his abilities in every way. As we have discussed using him for all of the abilities that we possibly could, we see he could be a perfect fit for help with both government relations as well as grant writing, and we know that both of those things are going to become very important in the future. So we as a staff are asking that we add a new position to the org chart. You can see it there in orange, and that will be placed under the administrative department under Scott's management, and that you would allow staff to fill that position immediately.
I do have a question.
Sure.
I had a number put in the budget. That includes our overhead. What is our overhead percentage? It seemed very high, didn't it? That, you know, the position is, I think it was $141,000, but that includes overhead.
Yes.
What's the salary sort of thing, and then how much is the overhead? 50% or something?
It's a little over 50%.
It's running about 51%.
Right? Yeah.
51%?
Mm-hmm.
I assume this is it's as close to county, the percentages, or the overhead.
What was that?
Close to the county.
Oh, to the county, yes.
Yeah, because the majority of that's driven by PERS.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And 28%. The stuff I saw today.
It's going up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it would be good if they just handed it all back to you.
This position was calculated into the budget. And when I did the number of employees, the number of meters per employee, I did include that position so that you guys would know that it was. I didn't tell you that ahead of time, but that was calculated into all of those calculations.
Is that the only change you made to the?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I move that we accept the org chart change and the hiring.
I second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the changes to the 2024 organizational chart, including the addition of a new employee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Item L, public comment.
That's it, me. Thank you. I'm glad I came to the board meeting. It's I'm very thankful for the insight that you guys have done and how reliable our power is here at Mesquite. I've retired here. I'm a full-time resident. It's been 6 years now. Take advantage of the plentiful sunshine that's here. And in leisure time and so forth, a beautiful new home here in Mesquite. So we're very happy to be here, and I'm very happy about the reliability of our power company has been with us. I am a participant of the net metering program, and in the policy that we have been that has been presented or is on Overland's books here is in a little bit of need of attention. There is the policy's mission statement is very clear. And I'm going to read that again just to remind everybody that this policy was created to provide means for a customer to offset or eliminate their annual energy costs and to reduce their carbon footprint. It's a very strong mission statement, and it's a tough one to adhere to for the way we have now implemented our net metering program. The first version was approved back in 2008, and they had rebates and all that kind of stuff, and that's long gone. And I'm not looking to offset the funds and so forth that are needed to maintain our reliable power. I mean, that is a cost that can't absorb be absorbed by power generation. There's been two other versions, and it's supposed to be reviewed and modified as need be every 2 years, and then approved. It hasn't. It has fallen short of that. And it is right now due for a renewal and review process. The policy mission, I don't want to be rattled, or I'm just trying to get across what my concerns are as far as the way the program is presently implemented. For most of us, there's about 400 to 500 in Mesquite now here that are enrolled in the net metering program. Most of them may not generate enough power to meet their annual needs, but a lot of them do, and they do end up with an excess energy at the end of the year or end of the fiscal year. I best just to read this to help this out a little bit here. So they are enrolled in the net metering program. They feel that they will feel a sting in their energy bill this coming December and January, as the excess energy credits that they have had are zeroed out during the December's billing cycle. Now, I know that has been a change in it. It used to read at year's end. But because billing drives are, they actually get shorted back in December. In fact, in my current power right now, I'm paying for power, even though I have generated more than I have needed. I'm an abuser. I am exceeding my power generation. I did add more capability to add more power, but it did not help. So it just actually compounds the problem a little more, that I'm pushing more power back to the grid than I can use. So and I do have a glut, trust me. I have an electric car. You know, times when net metering, when we didn't really think that everybody would have cars, but for home charging, it's very economical for us, even though I don't have to drive to work anymore, which is great. But so the customers which have generated more energy than their annual energy consumption will have no energy credits because their demand for energy has, I misread that. Annual consumption will not have enough energy credits available when their demand for energy is now at their peak because of the zeroing that had happened in the billing statement as of December. The excess energy banked earlier is gone, and solar energy generation is at a minimum cycle right now. They will have an energy cost even though they've generated more energy than they've consumed for a year period. The policy does not recognize seasonal cycle changes of demand and supply. Ideally, excess energy credits could be zeroed during an energy period of least demand and median power generation available, which is mid-March, April, which coincides with the second quarter fiscally. So if the reset of the credits earned was reset in that time frame, it would bring this to the point where they would produce and they could supply and satisfy their energy needs for that year. To add additional energy storage and generating equipment to cover the energy credit shortfall gap is not a financially viable path. Would result in generating excessive amounts of energy, and would be the energy challenges facing customers for home charging of electric heating, charging vehicles, air conditioning, and to meet their demand is a daunting task. With on-site storage and generation equipment available today, customers can quickly become non-compliant to current policy guidelines. They do not cover or talk or anything about battery storage or storage of generation of stored power on site. They have limitations of how much you can generate on site. If somebody were to buy a Tesla Powerwall, they would be out of compliance per the policy as is written, because it generates more power than what they're allowing, which is, I believe, 10 kilowatts. So that's just a single wall of power. Now, I have added battery storage, but I am under that 10K, only because our power here is very reliable. Only thing I have added is power for a short period of time for essential circuits. I can keep my refrigerator running. I can keep some overhead fans running for a longer period of time. Keep my internet up if I need to. But I can't store enough energy to drive my air conditioning or my heating or my wife's kilns. She has a hobby of melting glass, and it takes electricity to do that. So during these months here now, I had a $300 worth of credit because I have overproduced and so forth, which going, this was last year's, or I don't have that much this year, because I've tried to use the power that I have stored, and I was heating my pool trying to make it so I had my last swim. Trying to get the pool up to 80 degrees is kind of tough, especially this last morning. But because where my billing cycle ends up, it ends up I'm paying for last month's power. I'm trying to use last month's power this month. It's out of sync. The billing is out of sync with what I banked or what I've used as far as annual costs. So if it were changed to a quarter reset at a time, it would give the users that have banked enough power to carry them through to the point where they can now, they shouldn't have a bill, or they have a very minimal bill for maybe 1 month in February, because now you can start generating enough power to satisfy their demands. So I want to thank everybody, thank you for letting me stumble through this a little bit. But I know there is a concern, and I know there probably will be a lot of net metering people coming into the office complaining that I had power and so forth, and now I'm having to pay for power, and I've generated enough to carry me. Why am I being penalized? Well, it's really not penalized. It feels like your piggy bank got robbed. So it's just a concern that I have bringing forward to the panel, and I hope that they would give some kind of consideration to the change as the review of this process comes through. I don't know if there's anybody that's... When I came to check on a few things, it was very hard to get information from people because there is no committee or board or who is my point of contact for the net metering program as far as who could answer my questions and so forth. I talked to Randall a little bit. He was armed to the teeth finding out that I was going to come to the meeting, and he was concerned that I was squawking about the cost and everything. He says, no, I'm just trying to show a concern that there is a little ambiguity as far as how the net metering program is structured. So I don't know who on board is the liaison or the director or the committee chairman of such programs, but it does seriously need a review to bring it into the current times. So,
may I ask you to may we have that piece of paper?
You sure can.
And does it have your name and your phone number on it?
I can put that under for surely.
Would you please?
Yes.
We appreciate that you come in, because if people don't come in and talk to us, we don't know that there's issues.
Right.
So we appreciate that you've come in, and we will find a point of contact. Somebody that can talk to you, and I think the program can be looked at to see if there's any kind of a way it can be adjusted.
Yeah, and we've been talking about that. But can I ask you a question? Is that okay?
Sure.
I'm not quite sure what you asked for. Were you asking for us to look at this on a quarterly basis or to move the date to March? What are you asking
for? Yeah, that's what I'm asking for. I actually have a nice little graph here of my particular power demands. And I know I could have taken it for up there. But as you can see, I had a fairly large bank and I was depending on it, and it's wiped out. And my demand is the second peak of the season. It's right here in December, January, as you know, there is the demand for power versus the July period time. But it's also the lowest point of solar power generation that I can provide for myself. So it wipes out, it hurts me, whereas I can't generate enough power to satisfy my own needs. And my credit bank is now gone. So I'm having to go out and buy power, which is actually costing me, and my carbon footprint goes up because I'm having to purchase power to satisfy my needs.
I think what Mr. Cooper is asking is, are you looking for a quarterly upgrade of it, or are you looking for
just change instead of
the December date?
Change.
Instead
of the time happening at the end of year, or now it's been stated, it was stated for end of year or annual. It's now been rewritten in the last revision, which was not approved yet, at the December billing cycle. So it's being driven by the billing cycle. So I would like to see it being driven at the billing cycle at second quarter.
At the second quarter.
Is what I'm
talking about
for.
March then?
Yes. Okay. Well, being April 1st, yeah, I guess it's a...
Okay, give or take a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that. Look at that.
Okay.
Can we just put that on it for an agenda item next month?
No. Well, no, because we're still working on the policy. Yeah, there's a lot of
I've been
more time
since,
to work on the policy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been informed since in talking to Randall. I do know that you guys are going through a software programming. There's a whole structuring difference. I know, and to make any changes within the system is futile right now because those changes that are coming, but it may be a good insight for a committee or whatever to make sure that maybe some of these issues are addressed by the new processes that are now being considered to be put in place.
And that's one of the hang-ups we have. You're exactly right. It's our billing software also, if they're not able to make some adjustments to that, we have to do this as a hand billing, which is quite intensive. And that's what one of the things that we're trying to work through is working with our software provider to see if they can automate this for us. So we're in the works on that.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Like I said, that's all I'm asking. I'm not asking to change anything or give me a cost to you company. I'm just trying to support.
It may be a good time for a change if we were going to.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you're going to be having a strategic planning committee, it might be a time.
Yeah, it is. If I ask you one other question, you said that your batteries were adding to the problem, and I didn't understand that. How are your batteries adding to the problem?
Well, the problem is that Randall was telling me I'm out of compliance because I've.
He added after
the batteries really aren't adding a problem. I just said I don't have enough. The batteries that are there are strictly because of our reliable power. I don't need to power my whole house, you know, for a long period of time.
Oh, so the batteries have added to your problem as far as having excess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, I'm now using my batteries to help augment my power consumption right now. Because, even though they normally sit there offline and I don't ever need them, you know, until there is an issue. And then they'll just kick in and I've actually had a separate, what's referred to as an essential circuits panel, which will keep my coffee pot alive, my refrigerator, freezer, you know, and a couple of outlets and ceiling fans, and my internet out because for communications to know what's going on.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Thank you for answering that for me.
Yeah, and I'd be more happy that I'll put information down and give. I'm not sure whom to give.
You can give it to me.
Okay.
I'll see that it gets to me.
I got this.
Okay, is there any other public comment? Okay. Trustee comments. I have one. It's my last chance to make them. The mentoring program. I just really ask that you try and get it started again. We are depleting the resources that we have and the people that we have mentored already. I'm looking at different ones here on the board that got there because through that process, and we are looking for people to fill positions. If you can work it in sometime, please start it over again.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Anybody? Any other trustees?
I would like to just take a second and thank Judy for being the chair and for all the work that she's put into Overton Power, into her job. Like, I know... compared to what I do, and most of us, well, I know Mike does a lot too. He spends a lot of time on the financials, but I appreciate you, Judy,
and
all that you've done for our board and for all of us.
I have to say I've enjoyed it, which is really weird.
I certainly second the motion.
It was a learning process, and I really when Richard came to me, I thought, this man is out of his mind. And he told me I would get to like it, and he was right. I really do. So, anyways, okay.
I have a question, a strange question. To everybody, I guess, when and how would we go about talking about generating power?
So... we've had discussions about that with NV Energy and a couple of other entities. There's a lot of complications and moving pieces, but we're continuing to have those discussions. And it will be driven by our load growth. So we have talked about that. That's probably something that if you wanted to talk about in the future, maybe in an executive session, we could lay out some of our discussions with some of the partners that we've had.
Okay. It seems like a good strategic plan discussion, too, whether we ought to make more of a commitment or less of a commitment towards that entity.
I think you're 100% right, yeah.
That wasn't a weird question at all. I was prepared. I'm like, what's he going to ask us?
Yeah. And it could be partnering with a neighbor or somebody else.
Well, you know, there's some people that we can partner with that maybe are better than others, and so, you know, those are things that we want to talk about.
And maybe their grandfather.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any more trustee comments? Okay. Item 8, N, approval of the next board meeting, Wednesday, January 22nd, 2025 at 3 p.m. in Overton.
I'll move to do that.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that will be the meeting for January. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Any executive session?
No.
Okay, that was a grin.
I was looking at anybody else to see if they had anything, but no.
All right.
Yeah.
Then do I hear a motion to adjourn this meeting?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
I heard several seconds. Okay. It's been moved and seconded to adjourn this meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks, Judy.